Okay, wait, should I jump? I have to self-edit because otherwise I will legit
I know, right?
continue.
You know
So
what?
you
I'll
just
go.
tell me.
Yeah, you know what? Let's go ahead and jump in. Let me just do a
Let's
quick
jump
introduction.
in.
You guys probably
Sure.
jumping in someplace. I found a cut. You're like, wow, this got started abruptly. Welcome to episode 44, guys. So we've just jumped right in. How do you say your last name? Kate Yeager? Is it actually just
Jaeger
like Attack
nailed
on
it.
Titan? Oh my
It's
gosh.
yeah, it's also like, Chef Jaeger, that guy who broke the sound barrier,
Oh, okay.
Oh, and so many eons. Sorry, I keep forgetting that I have to be closer to the microphone.
Oh
Delicious
yeah,
dish.
I watch your Apex stuff, and you have a headset mic. So,
Yes, and I will say that's I'm upstairs. I'm upstairs in my we'll call it an office, but that's obviously my bed, and those are weights. Okay, so let's not be delusional. I have a like a whole setup here, which is great, and it's beautiful. Well, you can't see it now, and actually, this almost didn't happen. Jess will tell you this almost didn't happen because everyone in my area of Malibu is losing power because during heat waves, including one that happened on Thanksgiving, they decide to turn off the power to prevent wildfires, which I totally appreciate, but also almost really like doused my flame today. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, so yes, so I'm just excited that I'm here.
Yeah, so we were jumping right in talking
Yes.
about some of the frustrations of esports. We're gonna jump right into that section.
Let's, yes,
Yeah.
please. I will. So here's what I was gonna say is that my fiance, he works sports. He works traditional sports is what I like to say. He works NFL, primarily for the NFL Network and Fox. They're having a big weekend apparently this weekend. I can't remember what game it is, but it doesn't matter because HCS Anaheim is coming this weekend, and I'm very excited, even though there's no spectators. We'll put that aside. Anyway, the point is that it's so interesting to hear, because I do a lot of corporate stuff. There's a lot of plates spinning in my world. And so I do a lot of corporate. I do a lot of gaming, sort of gaming all up, primarily Xbox. And then I do obviously some esports stuff as well. It's kind of where my heart is. But it's so interesting just from a strictly like organizational standpoint. We were talking about how obviously, there's some disorganization. There's disorganization, I'll say, in a lot of these orgs. And what's so interesting to me is that so often it is the quick turnarounds that really require, not only is it quick turnarounds to get the talent on the roster to begin with, but I think a lot of times it's also lower rates, which again, it's like it's what it is. But also here's the other thing. And this was what the reason I brought up my fiance is that he has a, sports traditionally is a relatively lower rate if you're an on-camera person or if you've even if you're behind the house like in the control room area, and he's an associate director. So but it is like an understanding, okay, the rates are going to be lower just for sports, right? And okay, that's what it is. It's so funny because esports is like even lower and the time commitment is infinitely higher. I like and it's an understanding. Like I can't ask the esports clients to pay the corporate rate. Because I will get laughed out of the room, and that's just it. Which sucks because the truth is that there's a lot of stuff to be made. There's a lot of money being made on the other end. But at the same time, it's like, we're all so passionate about it. We all get so excited about it that a 12-hour show, is I hasten to use the word put up with it because I don't think that's what we're doing. But it is definitely, it does play to your passions. And I think sometimes that can be taken advantage of, which sucks. But I mean, I will say that I think, you and I've gotten pretty lucky, it seems to me, like with a lot of this stuff. And everybody's had their their burns and things, and I'm definitely in that boat. But man, but it's so easy to be like, yes, and then be like, oh, I need to probably have another job, which is why I have like eight in my own company. So there you go.
There you go. Yeah. There was so much to pull from.
I know I'm a tangential speaker. I apologize.
Okay, so I guess for people who, don't know you, right? So might see you a lot, perhaps, if they're Apex fans on
Yes.
camera.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you said, you wear a lot of hats, a lot of plates spinning. So, I guess what is Kate?
Oh
What do you
man,
do?
I love it. Well, so yeah, I will say if anybody in the gaming world knows me, and by the way, I'm sure that is a very limited number of people. I'm very happy and content with where I'm at, and I'm cool with it. It's either Xbox related stuff or it's Apex related stuff. All awesome. I love it. I am actually, and this is something I need to talk to you about at some point, which is you're doing voiceovers now.
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit of voice acting. Yes.
I love this. I'm so excited. I have some things I should share with you. I've been a voiceover artist. Although I don't feel very artsy when all I'm really doing is like commercials. Like, you know, like,
yeah, no, it actually feels the opposite of artsy. I literally just did something between interviews.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, this feels almost robotic the way that it's approached. Anyways.
Which is so funny because every single brief without fail, every single brief I've gotten in the last, like, I don't know, year and a half even, has been not marketing, not radio, sounds conversational, be authentic and and I'm like, okay, well, just fair enough. You're still asking me to talk about blinds, right? Okay, cool. Yes, yeah. Certainly. So do that. I also own a company that does writing support for like everything. Like we go from listicles to white papers to literally anything in between, tech oriented. But honestly, the niches can be everywhere. I'm also a full-time freelance for Xbox, and they are the coolest. I work on their promotion. I work on their promotion distribution team, and just, you know, really the thing I love about the Xbox job is that my niche and my boss is so cool. Like, big up to Sean McNair. My thing is that promotion and distribution is all about getting as many fans to see the content and to basically, and what we do a lot of is like accessibility, inclusivity, localization, which doesn't sound very sexy, kind of sounds kind of boring, which I can see why someone might say that. But the reality is that it's literally trying to get as many fans as possible to be able to enjoy these things in their native tongue or in a way that allows them to enjoy Xbox content the same way everybody else does. So that part is kind of cool. So,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Then your own company.
I have my own company. That's I was trying to think of what other things that I do. I also host things occasionally. for Xbox and Apex and gaming and esports and all that jazz, but also, dude, like I hosted two summits last week for 2 weeks ago. God, what is time? For Microsoft and it was great. And this is just kind of like working remotely, man. It's kind of the best worst thing ever. And you, I mean, I got to imagine you're going into some, you know, the season of LANs. LANs are starting to pop up now, and I'm so grateful, and I'm so sad that Apex hasn't joined that yet. But I do totally understand why. I'm not frustrated at all.
Yeah. I think we kind of get the benefit though of StarCraft gets the benefit of being paired up at Katowice with CSGO. Yeah. CSGO has been pushing that offline stuff.
Yeah. CSGO longer. And Valorant are pretty much, I mean, wasn't Valorant, was it the Iceland tournament? Valorant was the first one kind of out the gate.
Masters Reykjavik or something like that. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So they are obviously like pushing kind of that. And I couldn't exactly get into why, I suppose. You know, I think that, you know, there's arguments about paying and, you know, of course they want the money from the spectator tickets and all the good stuff, but then Valorant doesn't because they haven't been allowing fans. So it's kind of like, anyways. But I think we do have, you know, it's just like one of those things where they were bringing us off to at least season finals for us last year, because we're in 2022. Last year was only the casters and the production crew, no players, no fans. But I still thought that it was very possible that was going to happen because I was like, well, CSGO's already done that. They already had done that. Yeah. So when we also thought about, you know, when's our first real tournament happening, I was like, well, CSGO is doing this, guys. Like, and we know that we're going to be paired up with them for at least Katowice. Yeah. So I would not be surprised. So thus I am not. I do wish that process was going a bit smoother.
Yeah.
They seem they may have prepared a bit more in advance. That's where the frustrations came from earlier on. But it is what it is. It is esports. And, you know, we can get into a ton of topics off of just this introduction of you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one of them being how important it is to have other jobs in esports because of such frustrations, but also because of the money. Yeah. I didn't realize that traditional sports also gets paid a lot less, but that does make sense to me as soon as you said it.
Yeah, and so it's interesting to hear Chris is my fiance's perspective because there really is that trickle down. There's that, you know, the way that I see it from a Ray perspective, and this is for I mean, this is for across the board, whether you're on camera, whether you're behind the camera, or really anything in between. It seems to be that there is, when you hit that corporate streams and stuff like that, that's where a lot of really great money is made. They do require a lot of experience, of course. So they get what they pay for sure. But it's interesting because then you have like when you get into the union stuff, whether it's TV or movies, sometimes of course it can be really big, but for the Joe Schmo middle of the road person, it's generally great. It's not bad. I shouldn't say it's not bad, but it's like, once you like, it's middle of the road, we'll say, from a rate perspective. I'm not sure, you know, and a lot of it has to do with like, you're getting residuals. So maybe your day rate is one thing, and then residuals are really where you make your money, which is great. And then from there you get down to like sports, which still is unionized. I mean, depending on where you are, of course, and then of course you have like local news, you know, and so esports is still better than local news. I'm going to give it that. It is better. I did one whole year as a tech reporter in Seattle. and then they decided they didn't want to renew my contract because they said, and this was the weirdest thing, and maybe it was just to cover that I wasn't that good, which is probably true. But they were like, they were like, yeah, you know what? Our audience doesn't really resonate with tech. And I'm like, it's Seattle. That's fine. Whatever. I don't care. It was like a morning show job. And it was great to understand what I didn't like. I didn't like waking up at 4 a.m. Not a fan. But now it's like, okay, now I feel really great about all these different, you know, it gives you perspective. That's what I'll say. So.
Absolutely. I think that's really cool that you're able to do that, or at least dip your toes into it. Mm-hmm. I would never have known that local broadcasts don't actually get paid that well.
They do not, babe. They do not at all, which sucks because there's a lot of really good people and I've got a lot of friends that are in local news and they're doing a fantastic job, and I hope that they're getting paid better now, but honestly, it's just not at all.
Not Gucci. I do wonder, though, you know, as we're talking about this, I do wonder what the context is, because we haven't talked about specific numbers. Oh. We usually don't. But I do wonder, because I definitely in StarCraft 2, I've talked to the people in the scene, such as like Kalaris or Nathanius, or Smix, you know, and they've done bigger events, other events. They've done more like the corporate stuff as well. Yeah. And I know that they all just basically agree that StarCraft 2 is paid not so well.
Well, and I think there's also something too, like, where you've got the bigger organizations that, you know, will pay better, right? Mm-hmm. And then you also got these organizations, whether it's, you know, it's a independent tournament or a larger tournament company, that are really trying to like build a scene, and I don't know, man. There's a lot of it's interesting because on the one hand, like, you understand that it takes so much. I think sometimes fans don't really get that it takes so much infrastructure and so much manpower just to put a tournament on, let alone stream it live with the appropriate talent in, you know, the way that, you know, everybody does. It's a lot. It is a lot. So I can see and that's where sometimes I feel like organizations forget. Like, they're like, we have all this other stuff, talent, we're going to pay them this much because, you know, it's going to be fine. They're going to love it. They're doing what they passionately love anyway. And it's like, nah, man, no. This line item needs to be just the same, like, higher than that, because, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Absolutely. There's so much that goes in esports. I think that anyone who has really done any even, like, casual looking into the money will be kind of just like, hold on here.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Doesn't make any sense. No. You know, I've tallied all of the, you know, the casters for an event that I know their rates, and I've been like, okay. But, you know, there's some magic stuff that happens behind the scenes, and I guess it's true for entertainment as well. I've heard things like, you know, as far as advertising goes and advertising budget goes, which is what some esports are kind of like their purpose for being. And it's just that also seems like a big mystery. Mm-hmm. So there's admittedly just some legitimate mystery no one can quite pinpoint, but then there's also just, does this actually work?
Yeah, well, I'm curious your perspective on this, because it's so funny because I think for so long a lot of us have looked at esports, or I should say, no, let me back up, a lot of the world has looked at esports, and there is a fair amount of the world that still today looks at esports like the Wild West. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that, obviously. It that seems ludicrous to me. I think if you think that, you're very clearly out of touch. However, I'm curious what your thoughts are in terms of like, if esports was like a person, like where is it in its gestation? Like in other words, not gestation, I should say, where is it in its life? I used to, back in the day, I used to say it's 5 years old. It's going to kindergarten. It's really doing, it's building its foundation. Where do you think they are right now? Esports as a whole.
Very interesting question, because my context has kind of been shifted today, because I actually just interviewed DJ Wheat, who has been here since.
I love DJ Wheat! I yeah. love him! He doesn't know who I am, which is fine, but I love him. He's the best.
Yeah, it was a great interview. But it pushes my thinking back to his days, which were actually, for most people, 90% of people, were days that don't even exist. They're like, who? What? What was he doing? Didn't he come up with StarCraft 2? And you're like, eh. So I mean, like, try and think on it without that context. Well, how old would esports be? I do kind of feel like we're going through our identity years, like teenagers. Mm. Yeah.
Yep. So I agree.
Okay.
100%.
Literally, there's so many identity crises that are happening. That are happening in esports. And one big thing I always talk about is that suit and tie approach versus the grassroots approach. You know.
Yeah.
What it used to be for a lot of places, but is still for maybe fighting games.
Mm-hmm. Fighting games. I love when you go, you're like, you know, you're at a fighting game LAN tournament when you're in a large ballroom and there's a riser that's about this high up and there's two folding chairs. I mean, I know Evo and a bunch of others are in big arenas now and everything like that, but that is the fighting game community. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. But I think the way that they, like, the dynamic works in the fighting game community really helps keep them where they are, just for like a variety of reasons that I guess I won't go into, but they still, I think, have a lot of that, like, this isn't too different than what it was 10 years ago. Yeah. Obviously there's still more to it, but yeah, especially the commentary, whereas StarCraft 2, we got a lot more suit and tie, and I've even been a silent, I guess, like, crier of like, oh, maybe we should change, guys. Like, I don't know. But then there's Overwatch, I think, is one of the best examples, as they went super hardcore on the let's copy NFL for the first year of Overwatch League. And then thankfully, they also kind of took a chill pill.
Yeah. I mean, that's also interesting. So for Apex, we've got a really chill. I will say that I'm obviously a big fan of our company, our production team, our entire, whether it's the EA team or the Respawn team, the whole team that puts together our stuff. They're great. And they've been, what's interesting about Apex is that really there's a couple of things that they want to make sure you're not wearing so that it doesn't like blend in with the background, sure, depending on the background. Right. But for the most part, it's like, hey, dress fun, dress like yourself, don't wear a hoodie. Like, that's pretty much where it's at. And not to say that they're not, that they're hands off, that they're like, ah, whatever, we don't care. The reality is that I think they approach us with a, hey, we're adults. Let's be adults. Let's be professional about this, but like, also do you. So, but that's really interesting. I mean, I've never really heard, you know what? That's such a fabulous way to put the original, the first season of Overwatch, because you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. That's exact. It's like they were basically coming at it from like, you know, NFL game day or something, where you've got like those four people on the desk and, oh, those desks were so great.
Yeah. So I think Overwatch League is just a fascinating, like, it's like a case study, you know, and maybe it's a bit rude to people who are still in it. But that first year, I thought the people that they hired were fantastic. Mm-hmm. I really thought they carried the production and the broadcast, because I don't think Overwatch is necessarily a very viewable sport. Sorry, guys. and I didn't think the actual like setup that they had was something that I would find interesting, but the characters that they brought on, they, you know, stand out. But this goes even to like, big thing that's also happening in esports right now is kind of like, do we accept that we are like, diverse, that we're like multicultural? Because actually I think we're seeing occasionally, maybe it's a bit of a conspiracy theory, guys, but we occasionally see the bigger an esport gets, or the more that they want to present that kind of face of like, we're big boys, we're like the NFL, the less we see the accents of the casters. We see more American hires, English native speaker hires. So And I always like hated that that might have been one of the reasons why like Reinforce was taken off Overwatch. Mm-hmm. But I love that they, as I said, finally took a chill pill. They brought him back on because he was great. Mm-hmm. Same for Valorant. You know, suspiciously, everyone who did the most recent Masters in Berlin, all the native English speakers. This all began with the identity crisis thing. And I wish we'd embrace the roots. And I definitely wish we embrace multiculturalism.
Why do you think that is? I have a theory, and it's because, let me real quick tell you my theory, and then I want to hear yours, because I don't get to talk esports with anybody, so really I wait until someone asks me to be on a podcast, and I'm like, yay, let's talk. But let me ask this. So here's my theory. So okay. I at one point believe, and this is something I'm like not particularly proud of, but you know, a girl needs a job. So I was an associate producer at E. Okay, let's just. At the E Network, okay? It's, you know, you go through it. You're living in LA for the first time. You do things you wouldn't normally do. Did I know anything about gossip? No. Do I know anything about gossip now? No. Which I think I was only there for like a year and a half. And then thank God I got hired on by Xbox. Thank you, God. But the point is, what's interesting about that is that, so I worked on a show called, I did E News Weekend, I did E News Asia, and I did E News International. Which, here's the point, is that what we discovered, or what they discovered basically, was that you could broadcast out one show from LA because it was from the United States, and like France would take it, Poland would take it, you know, Germany would take it. Everybody's great. Well, I think there was like seven countries, but either way, and they would all eat it up. They loved it. However, if you had a show that was based in France, you couldn't send it to Germany. They didn't care. So I'm curious, and again, here's my, I will say this, I'm very, very, I'm like very pro, let's get everybody in, let's open these doors, inclusivity is my thing, I am down for that, and I love the gender inclusivity, I love localization inclusivity, I love, you know, accessibility, I'm here for that completely, because I think it takes so many different voices, and it can be such an incredible cacophony of talent that I'm such a fan of. Anyway, hopefully I use the word cacophony correctly. I can't spell it, but I feel like I may have, like I might be on the runway, but either way. My point is that I do kind of wonder if part of the reason, to your point, that people that you see, you hear more of the American side of these, once the big boy pants get on, right, is for these, some of these premier broadcasts, some of these, you know, these esports that are growing in stature or whatever. I wonder if it's because they look at it as, well, everyone appreciates an American perspective, but not everybody in these different countries does. That being said, I'm not a fan of that. I'm rather, to your point, like, let's make this the World Cup, not the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
I do want to make sure that everyone realizes this is a conspiracy theory. I don't know what actually happened.
Fair point. Fair point.
But it can be seen as coincidental. And I know that other people have had like a similar line of thinking. So I don't think it was without merit, because the reason I would suspect is actually just to do with basically pronunciation and enunciation. So even to this day, you know, I have a co-commentator who's Dutch. His English is fantastic. He has a couple of accented words that are, you know, unique to him, but no more so than like a country twang, you know, that everyone would find endearing. Mm-hmm. So, and I still get a couple of, you know, say people come up to me and they're like, you know, like, oh, I can't understand some of the commentators, and they like look at them and I'm like, okay, all right. So I feel like they probably have gotten feedback from enough people saying that I don't really understand this person or that person, that they thought it was the safest bet to go for the native English speakers. But I always find that this is an interesting conversation. It's a difficult conversation, because there is the, yes, you have to be clear when you speak. Mm-hmm. That is part of the job. But then the other side, it's like, well, something about hiring a bunch of Australians to go shout out Australianisms all day is appealing, apparently, but then, you know, having some guy with a Dutch accent and a light one at that is kind of, it's not okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, I guess. So I do think that is kind of looking at the safe bet problem
that I can see
we do have.
Yeah, I can see that. You kind of keep that close to the, I mean, and I can also see orgs doing that just simply to keep advertisers happy, right? I can totally see that.
Sure. Absolutely. I could see a lot of the sponsors who are just poking their heads in, being like, what are you doing with our money? Oh, okay. That person is not speaking so good, because of course they speak not so good. And then, you know, just dip out. So something I don't speak of too often because it is a bit of a conspiracy theory, sure. But it goes back to what we were talking about, which was the development stage of esports. You know, what is the identity and what can be our identity when there are so many esports, more than there are traditional sports, I would assume, even though I haven't counted all the traditional sports in the world. There's just so many, because as soon as you put a mic in front of someone, or you make something competitive, actually, it doesn't have to be commentated.
Yeah.
You know, you could argue it's an esport. Yeah. So I just, that's what I would say, is that it's a teenager. It is going through some things.
I like that. No, and the identity, it totally, and I like that idea. I think ultimately esports is going to develop into a very interesting adult. We'll see what that means. Like so many of us, I'm waiting also to develop as an adult.
I know, it's going to come any second. Like, I don't even worry. I realized I'm 31 in a couple months, and I was just like,
hey.
No, that doesn't sound right. No.
If it helps you at all, and this is, I'm sure this is like, I shouldn't say this out loud because like they tell you not to, right? But I'm 36. So you're doing just fine, lady.
That's what I always think. I look at my co-commentators and I'm like, I'm younger than you guys.
Well, like, okay, so Praggy, it was Lottie's. She's a HCS commentator. Host. She's awesome. I'm a fangirl, big fan. Anyway, but she just posted her birthday. She's like, I'm 31. I'm 27. And I'm like, oh, you are. That's fine. What am I going to do? It's cool.
I do think we should get 3 years back for this COVID thing, though.
I think you're absolutely right. I think we had a little pause there, and that was fine. I spent most of the time literally sitting right here doing what I'm doing. Well, not talking on a podcast. I only do that a few times a year, but definitely just kind of sitting here, hanging out, looking outside, seeing what time it is. Is it dinner? No. Okay. Let's keep going.
Yep. So it's pretty, I actually don't even remember the first year of COVID, to be honest. It's kind of just out of my mind. So, you know, you're talking a lot about all the non-esports things that you have done. So, you know, what is your story coming into video games and esports?
Oh, okay. So I was thinking about this today. Nice little trip down memory lane. So I, let's see, back, gosh, when was it? In the early aughts. No. Yep. So like I would say 2012, something like that, I want to say. I basically had one long-term contract end, and I had like 3 months before we thought maybe another one was going to start. And so I was like, God, I mean, I was like, wow, I have something that like nobody has that isn't like a teacher. And that's like kind of a weird summer break. Like I've got like 3 months with the knowledge that there's a job coming. I'm like, what am I going to do? And for whatever reason, I latched on to, because it must've been around August. I latched on to the international, and I was like, just completely, that was my first, I mean, and let's be clear, I'm in comparison to yourself, in comparison to so many in esports, I'm a relative newbie in the sense that, like, you know, it's like the earth is still, like, the crust is still cooling. Anyway, the point is that, like, no, but the point is that I want to say it was like, God, I don't even remember who won and which TI it was. It was a while ago. Anyway, the point is that I was young and impressionable, and I did a deep dive. I did it's sort of an accidental, like, I'm just gonna watch as much as I can. I'm gonna play a little bit. I was terrible, by the way, just awful. So that's fine. Whatever, it's cool. You know, I'm just not a mouse and keyboard girl. It's just not in my blood. I'm a controller, and it's what it is. And I'm not that good at that either, to be completely honest. But I'm gonna deal with that. You know what? Open book. Why pretend? I still love it, but anyway. The point is that I sort of dove deep and like got really excited. And during that time, a production company that I worked with, they were actually doing, or maybe not during that time, maybe it was actually like a year later, but either way, started doing the other contract and everything. And they were like, hey, you're into this. We know you can be on camera. Do you want to go and interview players in Korea? And I was like, is the Pope a Catholic? Yes, of course. You know, like, let's do this. And what was funny about that trip, and this was, oh God, you only saw me once in the arena. It was in Seattle. It was at Key Arena, which is now something else. So I don't remember what year it was. I'll have to look it up. But either way, I did, I basically ended up doing one interview because the one team we knew was being invited, right? They were the one, the first interview we had, and then everybody else, you know, qualified in. Well, the other four teams that we had slated to go in interview in Japan and Malaysia and the Philippines, none of them qualified. And so it was like, oh, cool. Guess I'll just head back home after this rousing interview. And by the way, God bless this kid. I feel so bad about this because, no, I don't even remember who he was. And that's awful because I don't even remember the team. God, this has been forever. Anyway, the point is that he had been, because in China, trying to play on those Dota servers is a real headache, real headache. So they would, in Korea, it was a real headache because China was taking all, I mean, they were everywhere. They had to basically, long story short, he had to be online at like four in the, I think he was playing Dota until like 4 or 5 in the morning. And we had to meet him at like our first place and have an entire day, like breakfast, lunch, dinner, kind of meet his dad, interview him several times, go and tag along at like a PC bang and, you know, all these things. And he had to meet us at like 8:30 in the morning. And this kid has had no sleep basically. And he is just a wreck. And he's like deep into, like, he's made it. He's, you know, they've been invited to TI. Like, they have that thing in their crosshairs. That's such a big deal, of course. Right. And it was like pulling teeth, Jeff. It was like, and what's so funny too, is that actually that started a sort of a string, unfortunately, of like, I feel like now there's a lot of great esports interviews because there's the esports, a lot of more of these players, they know what's up. They know how to talk to camera. They know how to have, they can be themselves. And I feel like so many back in the day were like, pulling teeth is an unfortunate, but very, for my experience, accurate thing, you know, when it comes to understanding why, like these players didn't get the entertainment aspect of their job. Do you know what I mean? Like there was an opportunity and I think some of them missed it. That's all. I'll put that way. They did incredible things like in game, like no issue there. It was just the other stuff that I don't think they realized that they could do like so much better and that it was such an important part of their job. I digress. But here's so that was a fun, but that was like a one-off thing. It was cool. It was exciting, whatever. So I got excited. As I was getting into this esport world and stuff, I Dota was one thing, but then really CSGO is where the passion started. Cause I was like, I understand, like MOBAs are hard. They're just always going to be right for the novice, they're always what I feel like so many non-gamers, esports fans like point to and like, I don't understand that, so I'm not going to be an esports fan. You're like, well, that's just one. So there's a lot of others, you know, places. And for me, though, I really got excited when CSGO was on E-League. Like, I was such an E-League fan, and I was like, oh, man, my heart was just... So then I actually, which is how I met Seltzer, well, how I met sort of met Seltzer, just a little bit later because we had different weekends. But I was on E-League for 2 weekends. And there was a question that you had in your little thing about like, what was the one like gig that like you regret or whatever and some lessons learned? Yeah, that was it. Because it was like, and I'll say this in full transparency because I'm great. I feel great about who I am now and what I do and how I do it. But at the time, I did not realize how overwhelmed and like the starstruck I would be. Richard Lewis talked to me and I was like, you know, and like, and I was a big fan of Thorin at the time. I was a big fan of, oh my gosh, why am I, the, oh my God, Anders. I love him.
Oh, okay.
He is so, I got there eventually. but like Anders is great. And like, all of these, you know, these great people that I've been watching for, and I'd made my parents and my family watch, which was of no help at all because, you know, they were like, okay, that's fine. I'll just be here on my, but it was so overwhelming because I came in and I was woefully underprepared. I am, like I said, I'm transparent enough and I'm feeling great, but like, like, I know that I was young and excited and overwhelmed and like didn't get any sleep because I was so nervous. And the imposter syndrome was not even a syndrome. I was genuinely like, not that I was not good, Jess. Like, I was genuinely like, I don't even want to see video. I know I was bad. I was not great. And admittedly, there were some other things that I had to like deal with, some other casters who were being like unfortunately super sexist and bad stuff. And it was like all this combination of like in my head, and also like I just didn't trust myself to know anything, and it was just 2 weekends of just absolute torture. You know, I mean, I remember I had one of the players, he was a French guy, Frenchman. And of course, I don't remember I won't even say the name of the team at this point because I'm sure he's not on it anymore. But anyways, we were going into the nest, and it was after they had won a game, and they were counting down. They're like, okay, 10, 9. And he leans over to me and he's like, do you even know CSGO? And I'm like, I get so much of why someone would be not happy with someone like me being in that position. I get it. Someone wanted it more. No question. It broke my heart, and it quite frankly broke me a little bit. And because of it, I've learned that particular thing was, first of all, I will say this. Richard Lewis, I know he's a very polarizing guy. He's a muckraker. He does a lot of stuff. I get that. He was so kind to me, and he had zero-ness, you know, like he didn't need to be. He was so kind. And that was one of those things where I was like, oh, okay, so even when I sucked, right? Even then, he was still kind. He still treated me like a human. And believe it or not, that treating like a human thing was a baseline that I didn't know I needed. And that's something that I've been like, that you look for, especially in esports. And I hate to say this, but especially as a woman, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir. And anybody's watching, you know, like it's not a secret. We know.
Yeah.
So I represented some things, I think, to some people there. There's some people there that was like, oh, I'm, you know, whatever. And unfortunately, I learned very quickly that the imposter syndrome is real, that people will, that people really want these gigs. I mean, there's always going to be someone who wants it more. Always, always, always. But I also learned that, like, because like literally, I think maybe the last interview or something like that, I felt like I got my sea legs, and it was because I was like, okay, stop being somebody else. Because I think I went into that place, and I think we've all done this from time to time, where I just wanted to be the esports host interviewer that like everybody loves. So I started to I basically went and watched all these different people, mostly women, who were like, you know, that people liked, and I was like, okay, I'll emulate. I will do that. But the truth is that wasn't me. Like, that's not why I was hired. Right. So it became a little bit disingenuous, and it wasn't. Yeah. So anyway, so it was one of those things where I learned a little bit more about myself. It was a rough road, I will admit, but I also feel like I got through the forest, and now I look back on it, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is how I cannot be overwhelmed. This is how I can very big, big learning opportunity. That's what I will say. That's what I'll go to.
Trial by fire, it sounds like.
Trial by fire, yeah. And it's weird too, because working in gaming, I thought I knew more about esports, I think, than I did. Because gaming and esports, as much as they are very similar, they're also worlds apart. It's a weird dichotomy, you know? So that's my long, bitter diatribe.
It's tough to hear, going through such painful things. Yeah. It's obviously the benefit of putting in the grunt work and the uh-huh. slow climb is that I think by the time you get there, there is a little bit of like, I actually deserve to be here. Although imposter syndrome hates everyone. Absolutely. But there's still a little bit more. But when you are thrust into a new game.
Oh, and picked out of, picked out of obscurity too. Let's be clear. Like I literally, I had this agent at the time and they called him and he calls me. He's like, do you want to be on E-League? And I almost vomited. Like I was like, like there's just, so, and you're absolutely right though, because that's, it was like 0 to 60. And I think now that I will say this as an example, Apex, I got called in to be a host of the new Apex Legends at that global series, right? So when it first came out, you know, back so many, 12 seasons ago. Anyway, but like, so I got brought in along with a bunch of other great people and casters and streamers and stuff. And we did sort of like a test kind of thing. And I actually didn't get to test because I had to leave and do another gig. And they were having, unfortunately, really big server issues at the time. And so it was just like a big mess. It was early on. It happens. But then they were like, you know what? We're going to go with this other person, but we'd really like you to be and I have this one champion on the team and I got to appreciate Simona. What's up, boo? But like we had this one, they're like, you know what? We think you can do like the recap. We think that's a really great thing for you to do. And we're going to do it. And so I did like, I don't know, 12, 15 recaps of the different tournaments. And I will tell you, you are not wrong with the slow burn. And it was so great because it was a crash course. I was getting paid and I was able to like understand not just the dynamic of the game, of course, but like also the dynamic of the casting and of the actual stream itself, which is such an important, I think, mechanic to learn. And so for me then, and then they were like, and then they basically were like, hey, you know, we've been trying out some different hosts, whatever, you know, let's give Kate a shot. Like just throw me and see what happens. And I'm like, okay, cool. And so I did that. And of course, like the first thing I did was mute my microphone. And I was like, been looking forward to this for 6 months and here we are. Anyway, but it sort of then, and I had learned at that point, it's interesting thing about now, I learned at that point to like be myself, trust that I know my thing, trust that I understand this. And more importantly, trust that I have a desire to make the entertainment value great while also giving, because like the thing with esports is people want to better their own game. They want to rank up. That's the, you know, that's such an important part, I think, more so even than like football. Because like, what are you gonna like, I'm gonna, you know, go out for the Jets later, it's gonna be great. No, but like, but they want to improve their game. And I like, and so for me it became asking intelligent questions, for me it became bringing some sinew in between these different themes. And then that's sort of how it evolves. So you're absolutely right. That's slow grind. And God, I know so many people, like I'm sure like you obviously know as well, so many people that are like just going for it. They're like every inch, I'm going to do this. And I've seen so many great people start off like seemingly like this, and now they've just blossomed. Oh my gosh. I love it.
There's a lot more, you know, speaking of Apex, your journey kind of into it. Forgive me if this sounds rude, but there's a lot more pop-up esports is what I'll call them.
Good way to put it. Oh, I like that.
that might be mean in some people's eyes. But it, you know, it does kind of, it didn't come from the same history as, you know, like a StarCraft.
Yep.
Or any of actually the big three, honestly, Dota, League of Legends, and CSGO. Yeah. There is such a slow buildup. There is so many years of now the guys who are on top not making any money.
Nope.
So, you know, I come into it and there's literally a decade to look back. Well, more than that, actually, to include Brood War, to watch and to learn and to understand. But then when there's new esports that kind of just emerge because like maybe the publisher wants there to be an esport, you know, there's interest, there's competition, but it's still not the same level.
Yeah.
How, you know, I don't know if Apex, I don't know how much more you did in CSGO. Than what you were talking about, but you know, do you think that what is your perspective on these pop-up esports? Do you think that it is really difficult to like immerse yourself in the scene and almost in a way gives an even playing field to all these commentators looking for different things? Or I don't know. Do you think that it still is down to, okay, the truly passionate people who put hours of work into this one game are going to be on the broadcast?
It's such an interesting question because I feel like more so, and I will continue to compare it to traditional sports because I think it's a relatively good comparison for talent, I think, because of the how much they are different. Right. So for like, so there's a story that Erin Andrews tells that she was like, you know, my first gig was I was doing hockey. Like she was doing a hockey. She was sideline reporting for a hockey team in New England somewhere. And she famously talks about like reading Hockey for Dummies on the way to the gig. Right. Yeah, I know. Like, you know, but the thing is that there's no real, like, you can't really do that in esports. I feel like, you know, like there's such an intricacy that is required for every single game. I know that there are some that are particular niches, right? You got your MOBAs, you got your first person shooters, you got your multi, you know, like I get that part, but the nuances. And here's the other thing I feel like esports fans are fans for life and they're fans for their game and they're fans of like there, you can be fans of other esports for sure. Like no question. However, I find that there's a lot of passion. We'll just leave it at that. There's a lot of passion that these fans have. And when you don't say their thing right, when you come off as disingenuous, that's part of the reason I've learned to be just transparent. Like, hey, listen, this is just who I am. If you don't like it, that's cool. Like, no big deal. But the truth is that these games and these esports, whether they're pop-up or not, but a pop-up actually, I feel like, is starting to be a little bit more niche. And anyway, the thing is that I feel like these fans are like real deep-seated. And so it can be difficult to be, you can't be like an all, like, the only person that I've seen do this and do it successfully is Golden Boy. God love Alex. He just does things. And I'm very impressed. And I will say there are some similarities in like our, like for instance, our Apex cast, a lot of them are in Anaheim right now for HCS. Right. So yeah. So there are some things there, but, and then like, you know, some of our like Onset, Mark will be like also doing FIFA, but it's a little bit different. The point is that I think it's interesting that you bring up sort of the big three because there is that tradition that's so steeped. And I do wonder because I feel like where these pop-ups, the ladder isn't that high to climb if you're on camera or if you're behind. Delighted that StarCraft's a great example. That ladder seems like it's like eons. Like I would never expect to go into something like a StarCraft, like a CSGO. I would never expect to, in my mind, if I decided to start seriously training, which is what it is, let's be clear, training to be on camera for that, for Dota, for CSGO, it would take me genuinely 2 years, 3 years of actual, you know, like once, you know, like consistent understanding in order to be accepted, not even delighted by, not even excited, you know, celebrated, accepted as a potential on-camera person for that scene because it is steeped in tradition, because it comes from a place of like literally there are, and you know better than I, that there are people who have grown up, you know, there are yeah. people who have grown literally, like League of Legends is a great example. Like they've grown up with it. There are people that have watched that particular esport and certainly that played that particular game that are now in their like 40s, right? That's like, I hate to bring it up, DJ Weed. I'm just going to put it out there. Like the reality, listen, I'm no spring chicken, but like that's the thing. And so for me, it's funny because I think on the one side, it's harder to get into those bigger, but you do also know you've made it if you do. Right. That's really why, you know, you've made it. So well done. But also these pop-ups, you know, like everybody needs love and everybody's looking for an opportunity. And that I will say, the one little thing I will say is that I do appreciate about the pop-ups that they are. If whatever you like, you will find it somewhere. There is a place for every single fan. I mean, I'm sure that could be expanded. I'm sure it will expand. But, you know. Everybody needs something to do on a Saturday or a Sunday. That's probably the bigger one.
Yeah. Anyway. Love the use of the word ladder there. I think that actually really helps put an image on it. Like the ladder to get to the highest of the CSGO. But then when you're there, you're kind of looking down on everyone, even amongst other esports, not in the bad sense, but just that you have made it to a degree that if people were looking for talent, they'd be like, that guy does really good work in that esport. I've seen him before. Yeah. Let's go for that. So, you know, obviously they still mostly get offered like FPS gigs, yeah. But it's still there. It's still there. And I do think that what we're also seeing with, again, these like pop-up esports, which
I think it actually works. I don't think it's a bad thing, honestly. Presumably, and I love Apex and I will shout it, but presumably we're 2 years old. Like, I get it. I get you.
Yeah. The Babby esports. So anyways, I think they're also happening so much more now too. So we see less mass clamoring for the next esport. We still see some of it. I mean, Valorant's a good example of that. But I remember, you know, StarCraft 2 going to other stuff was just so difficult for people to accept. And then you had Heroes of the Storm, I think, was one of the bloodiest baths that you could apparently hear about as far as talent coming from different directions trying to jump on the next biggest esport. Yeah. Now I feel like, to a degree, there's like less of that because there are just more esports. Yeah. And what's really nice for some talent out there is that if you are stuck in a rut in some of these ladders that we're talking about, maybe you're a pretty good CSGO commentator, but they already have their top 10, 15 people. Like, where are you going to fit in? Suddenly Valorant pops in and you're like, I can make a go for that. Or suddenly the dodgeball game that I can't remember the name of pops up and you're like, I could do that. Yeah. That's, you know, Knockout City. That's what it's called.
Oh.
Like, it just, it happens. And then people can either just get more situated in esport, like actually get perhaps their due credit. I'm thinking of like Pansy in Valorant, right?
She went
She went from being even controversial at a point in CSGO to pretty well respected, but still not given her due. Yeah. To now, she's just like the go-to Valorant person. Yeah. And I hesitate to say that she improved that drastically between the two games, but more so that it just it fit her better. There was a new audience. There was it just worked, right? I know Vicky Kitty does Apex.
I love Vicky so much. I love her so much.
Yeah, and she's jumped around through so much, but she never really got, you know, her due. And then now she's more of like the mainstay commentator in Apex. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. 100%. 100%. Let me ask you this question, because I think this is a really interesting dialogue here, because we talk about like casters jumping over or hosts jumping over, that kind of a thing. It's infinitely harder for casters there, I'll say that, obviously. But I'm curious, like, it feels like there is a parallel between casting different games and playing as a player in different games. You have to, people forget, I think, that you have to have that same level of, and this is not me tooting my own horn by any means, but you have to have that same level of premiership. If that's not the right word, but like for as hard as it can be to be a player in a pro scene, that's hard, right? But it's also equally hard to be a caster in that pro scene, right? So I'm curious, do you think that there's a parallel between, like, in other words, oh man, I'm being very inarticulate right now. I'm just trying to figure out the parallel of like, do you think, for example, you know, say what you want about Ninja, but like, you know, Halo 3 was his game and he was a pro there. And then, you know, his pro status kind of dipped right after the next, you know, no one liked Reach, which is fine, but anyway, the point is that like he then he found his footing really with Fortnite, and that's how we all know him, right? But I'm curious if you can be like, if you can jump to some of these different esports the same way that some of these casters seem to be able to jump to these different esports. So as a player versus a caster, does that make sense?
Yeah, it kind of does, but I guess it is hard to specify, because, you know, Ninja is kind of a weird example because he was
Snipe Down's
really
a better one.
I don't know, I don't recognize that.
That's fair.
But, you know, Ninja was really good at the games he played past his professional career, and that's part of the reason people watched him, but he did eventually just become like an entertainer,
that's
a streamer. So you know, as far as players being able to transfer, I mean, there's a lot of examples of CSGO and Valorant. There's probably
that's
by
true.
Far the most.
Could you like
examples.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess it's more of like, and like the snipe down reference that I make is that he was a sub player on one of our teams in Apex for 2 years, and then HCS was like, hey, we're back, and he's like, deuces. I guess maybe it's more of the curiosity is like, is there actually, this is a better question, scrap what I just said before, here's a better question for you: is there a jump? You mentioned like CSGO and Valorant. They're mm-hmm. kind of simple. Let's be clear. They're of the same cloth, right? In a lot of ways. But I'm curious, is there like a transition from an esport? Are there two esports that are so polar, like diametrically opposed, that you could never jump from one to the other as a caster, do you think?
Oh, that's an interesting question. As a caster, I actually don't think so. I think the baseline skill that you build, you know, you talk about mechanics in this podcast occasionally, they do transfer. And it's something people tell me all the time when I start getting like shy about the idea of being good at anything else other than StarCraft. But I do believe it. I just can't believe it myself, you know, mm-hmm. That the mechanics are there. So, you know, if you focus on storytelling, if you have a clear voice, if you can enunciate well, if you know that it's, you know, an entertainment product, if you're a nice person, so your co-casters like you. I think you can actually do any esport. I do think that there is a chance that you're not as good. Mm. I definitely believe that. You know, if you are rocking it in CSGO and you say, let's go to Valorant, you might not be number
one. Gamble.
Actually, I think the best example I can think of this is Tastosis. So I've always wondered what would happen if they had to legitimately move to a different game, well, not move, but add a different game. Mm-hmm. They've done like sponsorship stuff before, but that never counted. Like World of Tanks didn't count.
I know. It doesn't. I know.
It doesn't. But I legitimately wonder, you know, they are top dogs in StarCraft mm-hmm. For a lot of reasons. And they're, you know, their brand is very powerful. The duo is extremely powerful mm-hmm. To a point that I don't think people really, know, especially when it came to the years of 2012 and around there. But they had to add something. Mm-hmm. And fortunately for them, they added Brood War, which went really well for them, obviously. But then they did do Valorant. Mm-hmm. Keep going back to Valorant. And I legitimately wondered, how are they going to be received? How is the hierarchy there going to be received? Now, in Korea, you know, they're still kind of in a same level of dedication. Is that the word? A lot of the other Valorant commentators in Korea do other things. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So I think they didn't come into the scene in that way, in that region, particularly mm-hmm. Forced to bow down and, you know, build themselves up again. But I do think overall, if we're talking about, do they get invited to Masters? Mm-hmm. Tastosis have this amazing brand. They're so well known. And apparently they are well liked. The Valorant community likes them.
Interesting.
But do they have the same bargaining power? And do they believe they should when they go into Valorant, when there's the 12 people they pick all the time for these Masters stuff? So I've always wondered how that works.
That is actually very interesting, because I guarantee we started this conversation talking about sort of the inner workings of an organization, whether it's a tournament organizer or, a larger company that, you know, is controlling the strings, you know, behind, if you will, marionettes, you know, like esports. It is interesting to think about I'm just sitting here thinking about the reality of needing to, because oftentimes in an esports, it sometimes works depending on which ones, primarily we'll say pop-ups, let's be clear, but like, there's a lot of like, hey, we need to shake things up. We maybe need to, like, especially if it's been around for a while. Sometimes there's the establishment makes sense. But like for us, like there's a lot of like, you know, still trying to get the footing and everything. And that is an interesting thought to think about, the fact that they've got a commentator or a caster situation that involves like potentially it involves taking a very big leap, right? A very big chance by an organization that knows this lineup. They understand this lineup. That makes sense. I know what the bottom line is here, but I do. That is an interesting case study, which makes me sound like super like, but the, but it is interesting because I think ultimately that kind of a thing can really have repercussions. That's the one. Thank you. This is, by the way, just tonic and lime. Okay. It's, I'm not drunk, believe it or not. Shocking is amazing. Anyway.
Yeah, it's that it, I use the word case study, the phrase case study as well, because it is probably the biggest one that I can think of. I can't think of too many other, especially powerful duos.
That have
moved over. I can think of a couple of really well respected solo commentators.
Well, even just being a duo, I mean, and I can think of a few as well, right? That are tethered, right? But even like they're I mean, I know there are a few. I mean, in my mind, I can only think of a few that have sort of stood the test of time, right? That have also maintained that one to wow. That's an interesting case study in and of itself.
Actually, yeah, the idea of duos is quite the common topic on this on the show when I talk to the casters, because I always ask, you know, do you think duos are the way to go? And then you know, they're pretty much biased how you would expect, whether they're coming from an esport that has duos or not.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it's because so much of the atmosphere, I think, right now in esports is duos. Duos. Pair up with the people you know. Only a little bit of experimentation.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice when the last podcast was like, no, you have to be good. You have to be versatile. Like, obviously, duos are great, but, like, you know, definitely make sure you know how to work with a bunch of different people.
And, hey, you want to talk about a guy who's had the longevity.
I mean, know, right?
100%.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But then, you know, there's also all this talk about duos actually being, what's the word I'm looking for? Discouraged from the tournament organizers, the people with the strings.
With the strings.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the idea is that, you know, the duo can actually, it can gain too much power.
Yeah.
And then you have to always hire them together. And then you also have to work with them being able to communicate with each other and bounce off each other. And it just, apparently it actually can be something that they, again, discourage.
Yeah.
But it's still not, it's not to say that that is the end all be all, because at one point I heard it was heavily discouraged, but then a couple years later, we have nothing but people trying to duo up and push duo. So I would be genuinely curious about getting into the minds of the people back who said no duos, they're too difficult to work with. And then the minds of the people who are saying right now, yes, duos, you have to cast the same person.
Well,
and I wonder if there's some, like, kind of almost explicit clause in their contract even that are like, get, you know, to be clear, we're going to pair you up together, but you do not have the same bargaining power.
Well, and it's so it's interesting too, because I do in gaming, I've seen it before where, like, the cyclical nature of, you know, some of those decisions, and it's, and a lot of, I think a lot of niches become cyclical. I mean, we talk about, like, to use a terrible example, but fashion, right? That's, you know, it all comes back to the same thing. But I think what's interesting with esports, especially now that we've got so many years under our belts, is that you do see some of these trends coming back, like, you know, the other way around. And a lot of times I find that it's because the person who was down here, who was just starting out, that PA that was like, oh my gosh, I loved that duo. I loved that person. Or I love that element. And then that element leaves because the higher ups here are like, you know what, we need to change this up. We need, for whatever reason, right? Whether it's a focus group, a sponsor does, for a million different reasons, things can change. Meta changes all the time. So things can change 1,000%. So then I feel like that person, and I think some of it has to do with entertainment in the entertainment world as well, but that person started as that PA, and now 10 years later, that person is right up here and they're making the decisions and they're like, you know what I loved? Let's go back to that. And I do wonder if there's that element too, because again, you know, the orgs aren't nameless and faceless, right? They're made up of people that have grown up with this. And a lot of the leadership now is, you know, the leadership where they may have started out, you know, in the esports world, I feel like the leadership may have started out as, like, you know, the person who was really into the gaming scene, really into the community, but, like, they're the older person in the room. And now it's like, this is a person who is foundationally was a fan found like this great foundation for whatever game or esport it was, you know, down here in their 20s. And now they've grown up into that place where they're like, now we are the bearers of this particular, you know,
torch.
That's the one. God, thank goodness for you. Thank goodness for the dulcet tones.
Yeah, it's like, I think you're absolutely correct, because what I'm thinking of is that those people, so originally very OG, right? Think of like Team Liquid being led by Nazgul, who was a player.
Yeah.
You know, at some point that guy has to say like, great, I have a company now. I need help. Like, I need to bring in people who know what they're doing with the company.
Yeah.
So he gets people that know what they're doing with the company. And just to be clear, I'm not saying specifics. Like, I don't actually know what happens in the company. Yeah. But just an example, he probably goes in, gets some people that are like, you know, suit and tie businessmen. They do business things. Yeah. And I will say for a fact, Team Liquid still is a very good organization.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, other examples that I can't think of right now, they probably ruined things. They probably came in as businessmen looking at the bottom line and they ruined things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then the person who may or may not still be in charge, who was the OG, says, you know what, this sucks now. Like, let's try and hire people that actually like esports. Or just the businessmen are like, you know what? Esports sucks. Doesn't make enough money. And they leave.
I don't get it.
Yeah. And then you have people coming back in who are just very recognizable faces. I mean, for a fact, this happened with ESL.
Mm-hmm.
Not as the businessmen coming in and screwing everything up, but as far as bringing up people who are recognizable faces in the mm-hmm. community. Apollo is still revered as like a god, basically, in the StarCraft community. And he's also very well respected in the CSGO community, too. So, I think you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's a bit cyclical in that way. And people hopefully are going to stay in the positions when they're good at them.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And the human element of all of this is something that we talk on Apex about, you know, like the person behind the controller, the person behind the mouse and keyboard. And we're like, Apex is doing a lot. I mean, we've grown as a production as well, and they're doing great things. They get a lot more like one-on-ones, you know, quick cuts and everything to learn a little bit more about that player or about that team. And it's so funny because it's so easy to make a lot of esports nameless and faceless. And I think right now we're all doing a better job, especially I think with social media, the way that it all works. Like, you can follow somebody on Twitter, obviously, but like a lot of these organizations are like, well, we actually have to start our coverage not at 5:01 on the day of the tournament. We have to start our coverage 2 weeks, a month before. And we have to, it's like, you know, a little bit, they take from UFC in some cases, loosely, go with me on this one, where you have the ramp up, right? There's going to be trash talk and there's going to be whatever. And it ramps. And then that thing happens, fight card happens, you know, Saturday, Sunday championship happens. And then now they're, you know, talking to Dana White in the press conference and everybody's happy.
Yeah, that's a really good example to just eat regular sport, whatever you want to call UFC, to bring in, because I think we're also seeing that a lot of the people making choices or understanding how these things work, they like UFC, mm-hmm. they like pro wrestling, that is to say the WWE and the AWF.
Oh, that Canadian thing?
The new thing that everyone likes now, I don't, Kalaris will tell you all about it.
Okay.
And then they all seem to like Formula One. Also, and a lot of people like poker and esports. And so Formula One right now, so I think a couple of years ago, a lot of people were pointing at UFC saying, hey, that's a good idea. And this could be totally applicable to this esport or that esport or all esports. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really change, to be honest, with StarCraft, but maybe it changed elsewhere. And now it's happening with Formula One, because Formula One has this like huge just interest spike because of a lot due to a documentary, but just in general, good publicity, good public facing image, like whatever you want to say. But suddenly I'm seeing Formula Dank up on Reddit, you know, and just everyone's talking about it, and everyone's talking specifically about the human stories. And it's just, anyways, we see some traditional sports is actually kind of even hard to put them in there, right? Because I think we're actually getting to a point where we have like kind of three things, if you will, which is esports, traditional sports, and then whatever you would say those types of sports
exhibitions
are. Something like that. And I think maybe esports is kind of like, well, we tried the traditional sports,
like 2015, 2016, like in Overwatch League.
Yeah.
I don't know about that one. Let's try this other thing. Like these guys are doing well. These guys are getting internet popular. The memes are flowing.
Yeah.
And maybe that is correct, but we'll see how that works out. Continuing to find our identity and all that good stuff.
Right. Just getting into those teen years. Can't wait for prom.
Gosh, I wonder what that would be equivalent be.
Oh God.
The first attempt at someone doing like a FPS Olympic type thing, right?
Oh,
decathlon.
Yeah,
that's gonna be our disastrous prom.
That's exact. That's one. That's Carrie's getting.
That's exactly the Carrie
blood
prom.
Everywhere. That's it.
Some guy puts $1 billion into it. Says the greatest idea ever. Suddenly, pig's blood all over.
Exactly. Him. He's curiously well funded, and you're like, "What? How did this? For Saudi? Never mind. I'm just gonna put that in my back pocket. That's too easy."
Yeah. Anyway. Oh gosh, you know it has been an hour already. It has a little bit more. Yeah.
Apologies. I have, as I have mentioned many times on other podcasts, I just get excited when I get to talk about it and basically pit, you know, open your brain, zombie. Like honestly, it's so much fun because I think there's also an element here too where you come from that world that is so steeped in tradition, that is the OG. Mm. I mean, StarCraft, Brood War, just the StarCraft 2 now, it's like, that's just, it's something that like pop-ups aspire to for sure. And it's also something that is revered for a reason. So
yeah,
kudos for getting yourself there.
Yeah. And hey, we might do the whole thing where it's, we're once again kind of what people want. Cause ever since 2011 or 12 with the emergence, I suppose, the popularity spike of the big three, there was basically the look at StarCraft, like, you poor guys never got microtransactions, you poor guys never got skins, you poor guys, you know, you missed the boat, or you were too soon for the boat, or however you want to put it. And now it's like, well, the potential Microsoft buyout and the Game Pass, maybe having a game with a legacy actually is worth something. And it just...
And side note, just put this out there. I've always wondered why, like, we at Xbox, we do a lot of esports. You know, I've done many of the esports things within, right? We've got Gears, we've got Halo, obviously make this triumphant like return with Infinite. And then you've also got Forza. Believe it or not, there was an esports thing with Forza and I did it. It was great, fantastic. But I will say that it's always surprised me that we don't leverage the fact that most people play on Windows.
Yeah.
You know, does that just seem weird to me anyway? And now we have Game Pass for PC, which is such a big, to your point, like it's such a big discoverability tool. And especially for something like StarCraft, that'd be really interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway,
but we shan't get into.
We shan't. could go for days. You probably need to sleep or eat. I know I need to eat at some point. And my dogs, there's one of them. The other one is sleeping over here. They're really good at napping, so I should probably, you know, feed them of some kind.
Yeah,
someday.
Yeah. Things to do. Can't talk esports all day. But it's been fabulous talking to you. Thank you again for accepting to come on.
Thank you for having me. The hallowed halls. Are you kidding? Please. And if you're ever in California, I don't care where in California, let me know. I will find you and we will have a proper toast.
Oh, I used to go there all the time for BlizzCon.
Oh, I know.
What's happening now?
I know. Maybe. Virtual. I love them.
Mm. Yeah, those are fun. But absolutely, ditto if you're ever on the East Coast. But yeah. Thank you guys for watching. I hope you enjoyed this very, I guess, conversational. You know, I felt like it wasn't really me asking you a lot of questions. You were just firing right back at me.
Sorry, you give me a chance. I mean, you're very good at this. I appreciate you taking those questions from me.
Yeah. But thank you guys. Thank you, Shane, for co-producing the podcast and for all the supporters on patreon.com/zombiegrub, Nick, Vinny, Steven, ET, and Ravi. Thank you guys very much. And I look forward to seeing you all back here for episode 45. Bye, all.